Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Under 40 Victims of Fate. Adam and Hank here with you. Hank, how's it going, man?
Adam, it's going well. You know, we like to talk, right? That's why we have a podcast. But we generally don't brag on ourselves. I will say this week, I want to take a moment. I worked from home today, most of the day. And when my lovely bride walked in the door, the dog was walked, the bottles were washed and put back up. They were made for the next day. Dinner was hot, piping hot, ready to go. We had tacos. I even made her a margarita. And so, boy, I'm not good at it every day, but today I was a pretty good husband.
Right on, man. That's impressive. Thank goodness my wife doesn't listen to this, so she won't hear that. And, you know, I won't be kind of in the doghouse for not having that done this week.
And I didn't know she didn't listen. I'm going to absolutely shame her.
Yeah, she doesn't like podcasts to start with, and she definitely doesn't want to hear me talk anymore, especially about Jimmy Buffett, which is me nonstop. So, but thankfully, we do have people that like to hear us talk, and maybe not so much that, but maybe more so that we've been lucky enough to have some really cool guests lately, and tonight is, of course, no exception.
Oh, no exception. Unbelievable guest tonight. I'm really excited about it.
Yeah, we are fortunate enough to have Nick Utley and Aaron McAnally, Nashville power couple, if you will, on the pod tonight. How are you guys doing?
Doing good. Great. Thanks for having us on, guys.
Yeah,
thanks for being pleasure. Here.
Yeah, we appreciate it. You know, so we got off on the right foot already when we started the Zoom. Your doggo was hanging out in the background. And so immediately I'm like, these are great people, as if we didn't already know it, you know? So. We've had some other core reefers and actually another kid of a core reefer on the show as well. And I got to tell you, everybody has been kind and gracious and unbelievable. And so we do just want to thank you guys for your time and we really do appreciate it.
Oh, wow.
Of course. Yeah.
We appreciate you having us.
Definitely. Yeah. So tell us, you know, kind of the basic question here. We want to talk about a lot of stuff. We want to talk about you all, certainly as individuals and as artists. And Aaron, I know you're big on artist rights. I saw the Artist Rights Alliance pop up. Man, it'd be awesome to hear about your work with that and what you do. That's really neat. But we'll also chat about, you know, where you guys met, how your story unfolded, that kind of thing.
Oh, that old story. I guess we can start there.
Okay.
Yeah. We've been knowing each other for a very long time.
That's true.
But we didn't really, you know, obviously because of our dads, but we didn't really get to know each other well until we were a little older and we both moved to LA at the same time. And we bumped into each other at a studio in Nashville and we were both kind of getting ready to head out to LA. And so we sort of connected there and then started hanging out some when we were both in Los Angeles and sort of because we were so like sort of family friends, it was LA's a big scary place sometimes. And it was nice to have a close family friend there. And then we both wound up moving back to Nashville and we didn't start, we were friends for years before we started dating. And then we got married.
The rest is history, man.
The rest is history. And what wonderful history it is and will continue to be, no doubt.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks. Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, you guys recently, Adam and I started this podcast a little while ago, but it was during quarantine. And so you guys had a really, really cool project too, going on recently at home with Friends of the Coral Reefers, that kind of thing. So what sparked that idea? I know it was a kind of a joint, if I'm right, a joint kind of deal with Sirius XM maybe and Margaritaville TV. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
For awesome. Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So, talk to some cool folks. Tell us about that.
Yeah, we, I think Mick had some experience doing some hosting and then I simultaneously to that, I had written a piece, I write as well, and I'd written an interview piece with my dad that came out. And so I think people liked it and they were like, oh, would you guys consider interviewing people over Zoom while we're all stuck at home? And so that's how it was kind of born. And we were just like, well, it'd be really fun to visit with the band. Because we get to see them, you know, throughout the year, we have for most of our lives. So it was fun to go through that list. And now we're on season two.
For sure. Yeah. Kind of expanding the it's now Friends of the Coral Reefers. not just coral reefer band. So it's going to be really fun. A little bit more spaced out. We're doing an episode every month on this one. But it's been really fun. Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. That's awesome. Not as easy as Adam and I make it look, you know, to host a podcast like that.
It is. It's a lot of coordination, but it's fun. The people we've so far this year, we've done Will Kimbrough, Marshall Chapman, and Tony Brown, and they're all good friends of ours. So it was really, it's really fun because we haven't been able to see anybody in the pandemic. So it's been fun to connect with folks.
For sure.
So I've heard you guys reference obviously knowing each other a while because of the band, this, that, and the other. For I'm sure everybody listening knows who your fathers are. But if you don't, Aaron's father is obviously Mac McAnally, and Mick's is Mr. Mike Utley, right? So from our experience with talking with Brendan and Peter Mayer, it's just, and just from an outsider, a fan looking in, the Coral Reefer band and that extended family feels very much like a really close-knit group. Kind of what can you say to that?
Yeah, I mean,
it's the truth.
It is. They were all at our wedding, pretty much.
Yeah, I mean, and it's been cool. Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
It's been cool. Like, as everyone's kind of gotten older, it feels like we've all gotten kind of closer together. Like you were saying, like, we didn't really hang out. I mean, we would see each other when our dads were at work, you know, backstage or whatever. But like, age differences are a lot bigger back then. You know, you could be 2 years younger than someone, and it's like a world of difference. But now it's like, oh, we're kind of all in our late 20s or early 30s or whatever. And we seem to just kind of grow closer as time goes on.
Definitely. I was hanging out with Brendan's sister, India, last night. Mick's brother lives with Brendan, you know, and we're friends with all, pretty much all the kids of Coral Reefers we keep in touch with. So.
For sure.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Yeah, speaking of that and bringing Brendan into it, obviously we talked with him a little bit about this, but you guys have a really cool collaboration thing going on with him with the Floating Collective. And I told him, I don't know how many streams you have on the run, but I'm probably account for at least a third of them because, man, I really love that song and I can't wait for more. I'm interested to hear from your side of it, kind of how that came about.
Hey, thank you so much. Yeah. That's really, you know, we were sort of a pandemic induced band. And so part of being a pandemic induced band is that you don't know if anybody likes what you're doing. So it's really, thank you so much. So it had been in discussion that we might do something as sort of second generation Coral Reefers. Because of the pandemic, and because Brendan's basically our neighbor and we all had antibodies, that's kind of how it got started.
Yeah. We're all kind of, you know, writers on our own too. And so it kind of made sense that the project started with the three of us as writers too. So we started writing and that's what came out. That's what made sense and that's what came out. And we're still writing and look forward to put out more music.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was so excited go ahead, Adam.
I'll just say one more thing, then allow you to jump in. I just love the whole, like, Laurel Canyon vibes and all that. It sounds very 70s, but obviously we like the old sound of music, right? We listen to more Jimmy Buffett than than anything. So anything that comes out new that sounds old is probably the only new music I'll listen to. So, yeah, I'm a big fan and just kind of, you know, waiting around. I'm ready for some more stuff.
Okay. Awesome, man. Yeah. We're just kind of stockpiling it and getting ready to record here pretty soon. So we'll definitely have something out this year.
Yeah.
Good to hear.
And then hopefully one day we can maybe play the Carolinas.
Yeah.
Come to Charlotte.
I love playing Charlotte, man. I really do.
Oh, I can't wait till the next time you're in Charlotte.
Yeah.
That's going to be great. That's going to be great. And I was thinking when I was, you know, obviously familiar with your work with the Floating Collective and thought before I read that, I think somebody had said it in an interview, I put it together myself, you know, that's why I was excited to have you guys on because Adam and I, obviously the title of the podcast is Under 40 Victims of Fate, right? We're targeted to the younger Jimmy Buffett crowd. There's a ton of us out there, but we're kind of, you know, we kicked around ideas. One of the ideas we kicked around was Parrothead 2.0, you know, like the next version down. And I thought, how cool is this? We're having kind of the Coral Reefer 2.0, you know, the next group down. And, you know, you mentioned a lot of your writing and those kind of things. You guys love to write music. And I don't know if you, I won't put you on the spot. I'll just say, I'm sure you haven't heard every podcast episode of ours, but at the end of the podcast, you guys will have the opportunity to tell us a few of your favorite songs. But a couple of weeks ago, one of mine was Book on the Shelf, and a song that you guys are intimately familiar with. Tell us about that.
That's very true. Yeah, we wrote it and mixed Dad's living in his parents' living room.
Yeah.
We started it hanging out. We were just having a conversation and
my dad's a ghostwriter.
Yeah. Yeah.
We wouldn't accept any credit, but
yeah, he was definitely a part of the beginning of that song. And we just, I don't know, it just came together really naturally. And then Jimmy made it Jimmy, and it was, yeah, we were obviously thrilled.
Absolutely.
We write together and have for a long time, but have never released anything or, yeah. So we feel really grateful. It turned out so definitely cool.
Yeah. It was so cool to hear him like kind of take what we did and really do his own thing with it.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Well, it feels, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, we talk about it a lot because it seems like our families never are going to retire. And that was sort of,
well, we hope not.
Yeah. Right. No. And that was sort of the impetus for it. It was like, you know, it's not time.
Well, you just unintentionally made a lot of people smile probably.
That's right. Yeah. 100%. It's so, that song so effortlessly is Jimmy Buffett though, right? Like it just fits his catalog so well. And I'm sure you had that in mind when you're writing it, obviously, just like his authorship and all of that. And then I don't know, I guess I feel like I can probably guess some of the words Jimmy threw into, as he would say, buffetize it. But it just, when I was listening through the record the first time, and Hank and I have talked about this at length, it seems like I think Life on the Flip Side is probably his best like full scope of work for an album since maybe the mid-90s. Like I think it's that good. It's a familiar album, you know, it feels very Jimmy Buffett-y. But the first time listening through, I remember hitting, you know, Slack Tide, Book on the Shelf, sound like, you know, it sounds like the Buffett we all fell in love with originally. So that's something you got to be proud of.
All right, thank you.
That's awesome. Yeah, man.
We love a waltz too.
So. Yeah, we wanted to do, he has a lot of songs like from the early days that are in 3/4. And so that was kind of one of the things that inspired that sort of vibe that we ran with. And yeah, I think we were kind of inspired by some of the songs from the early days and that sound.
As that. So you mentioned some of his songs were in what, Nick?
3/4 time is a waltz. That's, yeah.
Okay, so for the non-songwriters and musicians of us, fun fact, I'm not a musician. I'm excellent at singing along at concerts, not a pro musician. And I like to take opportunities where I can when I have actual professional musicians and songwriters to learn a little bit about what you all do. So when you're writing, do you decide, here's how I'm going to write? Is it lyrics and music? Or is it, you know, here's the musical style I want to write in. I'm going to get some words into that. How does that go for you guys?
It completely depends on what project we're working on. Sometimes if we're just writing to write, it's whatever inspires us in that moment. But sometimes it starts with a lyrical idea, or sometimes it's Mick has a melody. We think about waltzes in our house a lot because our dog drinks in threes. It's like bop, 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 bop. but yeah, I mean, sometimes it starts with like actually for the Floating Collective, for On the Run, the first line of that song just came out of nowhere while I was driving on the interstate alone, Massachusetts with a bus. And that's, and when we got together to write, I was like, I got this weird, I don't know what it means. I got this line in my head, and then it all kind of came together from that. So it just depends on what we're working on.
I think it does. I think it just happens randomly, but I also think that like, depending on the style of music you're working on, like for example, doing something that's a little more folky, like Floating Collective or writing this song for Jimmy, I think probably like the lyrical ideas were really more of the impetus, because that's kind of like what's the most important thing there. Like in folk music or country music or whatever, you kind of like the lyric is at the top. But like if we're writing a pop song, we're probably thinking more melody first and the lyric is secondary to that. So I think a lot of times, depending on what you're writing for, that's kind of what you're focused on building around.
Kind of for someone that is fascinated by songwriting like I am curious, do you guys, from what I understand, Book on the Shelf is your first like outside cut. Do you plan on pitching songs to other artists, or maybe just trying to keep it for whatever project you guys are working on moving forward?
We don't really have a plan.
We have no plan. Right. I'm just chilling. Yeah.
We both do a million different things and music is one of those. And certainly more Mick is a producer and a songwriter and he's had outside cuts.
Gotcha.
But we'll continue to, I'm sure. But yeah, I think we're just taking it day by day and just making stuff. We make stuff with our friends. Some of our friends are actual real grown up songwriters and that stuff gets pitched sometimes. And yeah. So I don't know. It's not something that we like are pursuing on a daily basis, I'd say.
No, I think that sounds like a good plan, but we really haven't made any steps towards that. So
that's a
we'll see.
Yeah, that's such an admirable way to live. Not that you need my validation, right? But I think there's so many of us that are listening that are like, I love it. You know, that's why folks like music and generally and maybe particularly drawn to Jimmy's music. Man, you get to just kind of not float through life, but you get to, I don't know, for me personally, it helps me stay grounded in good music that, you know, like you all put out with the collective. It just helps me just stay really grounded and remember what I'm thankful for and those kind of things. And I try to not, Adam and I, if you've picked up in the last 23 minutes, try to not take ourselves too seriously either. So that's cool.
Well, I think it's important. Like it's really hard to make a living making music. That's like a lot of what I do with my day job is advocating for working class musicians. And so I think the part of it is that we love making music and it is, for lack of a better word, magical, but I think being dependent on it for an entire income would change the way that I was viewing it. And maybe that's why I've never fully pursued it, if that makes sense. Like it might take away some of the magic if that was the only thing. And we get to carve out time to just be creative and I don't know. I don't mean to be speaking for you because you may feel differently than I do.
I mean, yeah, I think for me, it's a lot of that is more applicable to like the different kinds of things that I do in music. Like,
yes, for sure.
You know, and
playing live and
yeah, like playing live versus like, I definitely, it would be very difficult to just be a songwriter for me because it's, I don't know. It's fun to be able to like wear different hats for me and do different things and have income coming in different ways because it just keeps it interesting. And that's one of the reasons why I really love producing, because you kind of just get to do that and like take on and like sort of aid the identity of the artist you're working with or whatever. I really like changing it up all the time. I get bored pretty easily, so.
So I don't want to make this too much about your fathers, right? But obviously they're legends in Jimmy Buffett lore, to say the least. I was wondering, as their kids growing up, and obviously it had to be great, you know, growing up amongst all those people that you have mentioned, you know, you guys were all so close and still are, which is awesome. How old were you when you maybe first heard a song that your dad was a part of writing, though? And you were like, wow, that's really freaking good.
Whoa. Well, I had a really weird experience when I had to go to the ER when I was like 5 or 6 years old. And the ER doctor bent down and quoted, or he said something to me. And I was like, I don't know. What did that old guy just say to me, you know? And it was a lyric of my dad's, but the lyric was, I'm going to screw it up now. When the Mississippi sun shines down on your brother, it'll change your opinion on love. And he said that, and I was like, what are you talking about? And I remember my mom, I repeated it to my mom. She's like, oh, that's a lyric of your dad's. And I was like, oh. But yeah, I guess it, I don't know. I was always around dad playing songs in the studio and stuff. I think I kind of always thought he was a great writer. I always loved his music. And I loved his friend's music too. So what about you?
I don't know. I mean, I remember, I don't know if I made the connection between like my dad's songs that he's written with Jimmy, seeing the live shows. Like, I think, you know, I never really realized that I knew the whole Buffett catalog till I was an adult. And I was like, oh, I've been to like 20 shows and I know all of these songs, you know, cause it's like going to see my dad play every year or whatever. But my dad does some producing. He produces Jimmy with your dad, and he did some producing of other artists in the 90s. And many people might not know, but producers listen to the artist's music more than anybody else, like times 10 for sure. And so my mornings and afternoons going to and from school was like listening to work tapes. And so one of the albums that he produced was with the W.O. Smith School of Music here in Nashville. It's called the Parakeet album, where they sang Jimmy Buffett songs. And I remember him producing that and listening to all those songs. And so there were a couple of songs that he wrote with Jimmy on that I remember like connecting to as songs that he had written. Yeah.
It sounds like your trips to school were like mine, a whole lot of Jimmy Buffett. I understand. My dad was the same way driving us, though it was not for work purposes. I think it was to keep his sanity purposes for my dad.
Well, speaking of, can we ask you guys, how did you guys start listening? Was it both of you? Was it your parents that got you into it?
Yeah. For me, it was. I remember being really young listening to Jimmy Buffett and, you know, never got over it. You know what I mean? I never hit that stage where like, oh man, that's my parents' music. Like I have varied interest for sure. Like I have some very eclectic music taste. I was famous in law school for my playlist that literally included everything from like early 2000s New Orleans rap to Bruce Springsteen to Regina Spektor. Like I would play the same 10 songs every time we went into the little bar we like to go to. So I was famous for my playlist. So I love music, but I always seem to come back to Jimmy Buffett. Have been a huge fan, married somebody who is very understanding about that. We go to concerts all over the country now and have a great time. And so it's been a lot of fun.
Cool.
Sweet.
Interestingly enough for me, I'm 26, right? So I grew up a huge Kenny Chesney fan, and I still love Kenny. And Aaron, obviously your dad has worked with him a lot, sure. Which I've, in fact, one of my favorite songs period is Island Rain that your dad wrote with Kenny. But anyway, I digress. I heard Kenny talking about how much he loved He Went to Paris, right? And I had heard Margaritaville, I'd heard Changes, but when I heard He Went to Paris, that was a little something different. So that led me to Son of a Sailor and Volcano and Boat Drink. Still the songs you know by heart. But I heard Trying to Reason with Hurricane Season on No Shoes Radio one day. And I was like, oh my goodness. Like that's next level. For whatever reason, it connected with me. That sent me to A1A. And I was gone and I ain't back yet. So
I love it. You got to chart it out in your mind.
yeah so it is weird because, you know, most people probably grew up with Jimmy, and then if they're a fan of Kenny, they see many parallels there, right? But for me, it was kind of the opposite.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's been a fun trip, and I mean it's led to this podcast, right? And Adam and I being friends. And I'll tell you what, we didn't think anything, you know, we were like, whatever, like we talked about it for a while. Especially now when you go to the shows, I don't want to talk about a couple of shows or maybe the first one that you all remember or some funny memories from some shows that you all have. But, you know, it's fun now when you go, you start to see a whole lot more people. It's not just like, you know, the older crowd that was back with Jimmy in the 80s and 90s. You see a whole lot more people, you know, that are a lot younger. And whether they discover James late in life, or whether they, you know, have like me, have been a huge fan since they were literally don't have memories of my life that don't include his music. You know, we're all types. So speaking of shows, do you all remember your first Jimmy Buffett show?
I think I do. I think it was at Starwood in Nashville. I think I was maybe 13 or 14, something like that. I'm pretty sure it was the first time that one of my little sisters had ever smelled weed. I remember that. I think I might have seen like a theater show or something before then, but I think that was the first like real big show that I ever saw. What about you?
Yeah, I think my first memory of a show is at Starwood too. I'm sure I went to a show before that, but I would have been like maybe 5 or 6. And, you know, I think the whole family put on the Hawaiian shirts.
Just very good.
Dressed to impress. And yeah.
I will say, I think our entire teenage years were spent like trying to keep our friends from stealing booze from the backstage.
I'm sure. I can imagine. I think I said that to Brendan when he was on the show. Like, even if your friends weren't necessarily super into your dads and their music and the band, I bet you guys were allowed to sleep over anywhere you wanted. You know, I bet their parents were all like, absolutely. Like, have them come over.
I don't know. My dad was a crazy long-haired people.
That's true. That's right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Majestic hair.
Uh-huh. No doubt. I was on a hike the other day with a friend. We had just started walking and I looked out on the golf course that's adjacent to the park. And I was like, is that my dad? She was like, yep. And you could see him. He was like probably 3 football fields away.
Cajun martinis and afternoon golf, you know?
Yeah.
Aaron, you talked a little bit about your day job and artist rights and how involved you are with that. Could you just elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah, sure. So I do a myriad of things. I'm a consultant essentially. And I do a lot of writing, prose writing, for different publications, but so that's part of it. And then I work with, my colleague, Chelsea Crowell. We do, a lot of artist rights work. We do education work. We do, advocacy work, on behalf of and alongside artists. So we do stuff, everything from like working with the Copyright Office on initiatives they're working on, to presenting at conferences, to free education work for songwriters to learn about all the ways that they can make money and why they're not making money. so we try, Chelsea and I both, her parents are in music and I grew up in music, so we both make music ourselves. So we try to be helpful where we can, just because we have that that background. So yeah, we work with our municipal government to see ways that we can have them help artists and all over the place.
Do you guys have a lot of live music there in Nashville or something? Is that why you work with the municipal?
We do. Okay. Quite a bit.
I heard that somewhere.
Oh, we're excited for it to come back. It's been on, yes, obviously on pause like everywhere else for a
while. Yeah. So have y'all got to play any shows at all lately, like distanced or otherwise?
No, we have not played any shows, but we went to our first show on Friday, which was pretty cool.
Yeah.
It was like a small setting show. What would you say? Like maybe how many people are there? 30 or 40?
Yeah. And it was a wine tasting slash show. Yeah,
tables 9 feet apart. But it was like a singer-songwriter acoustic show, but it was a show and a wine tasting together. So we did like 2 30-35 minute sets. We had 3 tastes of wine.
Yeah.
And
it was
awesome.
So it was our friend Nick Howard, who is a singer-songwriter from the UK. And he was offered a spot on the German Voice years ago, but he didn't speak German. And he was like, I don't, what, you know, whatever. They're like, you have 6 weeks to learn German. And he learned German in 6 weeks. He went on and he won.
So that is the most impressive linguist story I may have ever heard. So, I used to do, my wife and I both volunteer in an immigration law clinic for refugees and help them with their immigration stuff. And I knew a very young girl, she might've been 10 or 11, who in a refugee camp taught herself Swahili in a year.
Until
now, that was my most impressive linguistic story until your friend taught himself German in 6 weeks. That's even better.
Enough to win the boys. But now they have this company called Bookable, and they do house shows all over the country with different artists. But in the pandemic, they started this thing called Secret Sounds, and it's this wine tasting thing. It's so cool.
Yeah.
It's like a nice way to connect with people, but you're socially distant, and it was really fun.
It was really fun, yeah.
Yeah. That sounds really neat. I'm gonna ask you guys a couple things real quick, because Adam is the big musical part of our show. He'll talk songwriting and music and those kind of things. And I tend to like more like social and historical context, I think. And so balance. We've gotten odd compliments. We talked earlier about, so we've had cool guests on the show, but like last week, hello to Paul, if you're listening. Last week was our first time. We've had a lot of people hit us up and email us and be like, hey, the show's incredible. I want to come on there. And I never would have dreamed this 3 months ago when we were starting, but we have like a backlog of people that want to come on the show.
Cool.
We shuffled a lot of people to the back of the line to make sure we got you guys on this. Keep sliding them back, you know. But growing up, you know, I guess you were drawn, you've been around music so much. As artists and songwriters, producers, you've been around so much music and so many great musicians. Obviously it's impacted it, but outside of that, what kind of things have shaped you all? It's whether they're experiences, where you live, the people you're around, whatever it is, outside of obviously who you grew up with and around, what else kind of shapes your songwriting, what you do when you produce, those kind of things?
I mean, no, you got to start.
Well, I took a real left turn away from music when I was young, and I studied in Asia. So I studied in China in college, and then I moved to Hawaii and did a program there, and it was in Cambodia and Thailand, and DC studying. And I think that really shaped me in a strange way. It was like getting to see different parts of the world that like no one I knew had ever been to. And I was studying at the time sort of conflict resolution in Asia. And I think when I was doing it, I was like, why am I doing this? Like, you know, it was sort of like, where is this coming from? And how is this going to fit into my life when I go back to Nashville and Muscle Shoals? And, you know, and it really has come into play, like everything from songwriting to the business world to, I'm the chair of a municipal property in Nashville. It comes into play all the time. We're building a soccer stadium on there right now. And there's talks about NASCAR coming back to it. So it's a lot of conflict negotiation. I think it's really shaped a lot of who I am, getting to travel the world at a young age, and learn so much about so many different cultures. I think it really shaped me.
Yeah. Cool. Well, I mean, I don't know, man, there's just so much, but I'll touch on a few things. I mean, I think, you know, just growing up, like some of my earliest memories are my dad playing piano and just always like having music in the house. And also my parents' musical tastes being really random, which is awesome. Like, I think my favorite artists, my first favorite artists were Aretha Franklin, Bob Marley, and Nirvana. And just, you know, hearing like all different types of music growing up really shaped me. And, you know, just hearing it all the time. Going to New Orleans a lot. I love New Orleans music. And we used to go, you know, try to go to jazz fests every year, which is amazing if anyone hasn't gone or doesn't know about it.
Yes.
Jazz Fest in New Orleans is one of the greatest like musical and cultural experiences that you can have, for sure.
Very cool.
Yeah, we miss it real bad.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, just that kind of stuff. I mean, I studied jazz too, which definitely helped me understand a lot about music, but also just kind of gives you a fearlessness about, you know, improvisation, and that how you can use that in other aspects of your life.
And if it's fun or cool, just go do it, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
I love that about jazz. So I got to ask real quick. I know Adam's probably got another question or two to jump in with, but I got to ask real quick, being a fan of New Orleans music specifically, are you a fan of like Jimmy's more New Orleans inspired stuff? Like, so the Wino one I know is a top probably 10 favorite of mine. Is that, you know, is that some of his early New Orleans stuff? Does that get you too?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I love all that stuff.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. It's fun being down there when they play.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
So you talked about Mick, some of your favorite musical influences growing up. I mean, I'm always interested to hear with songwriters. So I'd love for both of you to chime in a little bit. Kind of who are some of the contemporary artists right now that you enjoy listening to?
Contemporary. I love Phoebe Bridgers.
Yeah, Phoebe Bridgers is like our number one for sure.
Do y'all listen to Phoebe?
So my sister's a big fan. So I've not really gotten into her. I've not really tried to get into her, but maybe I should now. Maybe that's some validation there.
Yeah, I will now.
So incredible, yeah.
Truly. I really
is that the girl that sings the driver's license song? Is that not her?
I don't know about that one.
Maybe not. Okay.
I think that's someone. Yeah, that's not her.
Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah. We listen to a lot of her music. Who else do we listen to? We listen to a lot of old music.
Yeah.
I love St. Vincent. I don't know if you.
St. Vincent is awesome.
St. Vincent is amazing. We listen to a lot of world music.
Yeah. We've been listening to a lot of Dexter Gordon.
Not really contemporary.
No. I mean, dude, I got to look at my Spotify. If you look at my Spotify, then I'm good to go
here. Right, right.
Yeah, I think that's part of, like, Harvey, our dog is very hungry for dinner, so he's making a lot of noise in the background. I think part of modern music and streaming is, like, you find something that you like and you add it to a playlist and you don't necessarily dig in and know that much about the artist.
Right.
An unfortunate part of, you know, it's not like you go sit in the record bin and read their biography on their album cover or whatever.
Just scrolling through here, absolutely. Andrew Bird is amazing.
For sure. Adrian?
Yeah.
Adrian Lenker?
Yeah, we love her.
Andrew Bird is we listen to a lot of Andrew Bird.
For sure. Yeah.
I selfishly ask because I'm always looking new artists, right?
Yeah. We listen to a lot of like Gary Clark Jr. Oh, a lot of, I'm going to butcher his name, but Michael how do you say his name?
Kiwanaku.
Do you know him?
I don't, but Gary.
I'm learning all sorts of stuff.
Which reminds me, I got on a real kick and I really went a deep dive on this. So I haven't been listening to him as much in the last couple of weeks because I've been super busy, but the Black Pumas.
Oh yeah.
You guys hip to the Black Pumas.
So right? Good.
It's amazing. Especially I love the deluxe album. Both of them are great, but the deluxe album is so cool because it's a bunch of live stuff, a bunch of like studio takes, some really cool covers. They're a great band out of Austin. Just really vibey and incredible.
I'm really excited to check these people out.
Yeah, but you guys have go ahead. Sorry.
I was going to say, I love the Gary Clark Jr. drop right there. Like,
yeah, for sure. Black Pumas are a lot like that. I mean, yeah. It's very sort of, they like people consider them psych rock, but it's very kind of R&B focused. For sure. Really cool.
Our friend Langhorne Slim just put out a quarantine record. It's really good too. If you like folky kind of stuff, definitely check that out.
I definitely like that. His name was what again? I'm going to write that down.
Langhorne Slim.
Yeah, I was actually going to say, I don't know, have you guys ever heard of Brett Denon?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been really into his sound lately. It's awesome. it's kind of folky too. So
yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Well, we love Jason Isbell and you know.
Yeah, he's awesome. He's awesome.
Come on.
Yeah, for sure.
All the greats.
Yep.
For sure. Yeah. So this is probably our favorite part of the show, as I tell people, but we normally, Hank and I will give our three or four songs we're vibing to most that week, right? Because there's so many we love. Mm-hmm. But tonight, we're going to give our five between us, like that we're really jamming with right now. And then we want you guys to figure out maybe your five Desert Island Jimmy Buffett songs.
Okay. Yeah.
So no one, again, if you've not heard the end of our podcast, I'm sure like everybody, you start them and get busy and maybe don't finish. So if you haven't made it to the end of one of our podcasts yet, we try to say, hey, if you're going to be on a desert island for like a week and you had to take the four or five songs you're vibing with the most right now, James songs specifically, which ones would they be? And we always, when we have two guests on, we always do five. So you don't get to go two and two. You have to at some point collaborate on one.
I was going to say, do we have to agree on all of them?
Yeah, no. Have at it. Adam, you want to do a couple first, man? While they think about it, they probably
sure. Sure. So let's see. One that I've really been enjoying this week has been That's My Story and I'm Sticking to It. Nice. From off to See the Lizard. Kindergarten King of Excuses, Sister Mary Mojo, So Hard to Trick. Like I think about, you know, you hear Jimmy references Catholic Schoolboy Days so much, and I just think about like little mischievous Jimmy, you know. But that song's got a really cool, very late 80s vibe to it, right? So yeah. I love that one. And then, you know, I've always been a bit infatuated with Jimmy's infatuation with space and wanting to go to space. And in fact, I believe Mr. Utley was a co-writer on this one, Come to the Moon. Nice. So yeah, from Riddles in the Sand. That was one of the first, I'll say 15 or 20 Buffett songs that I stumbled upon. And I was like, this is really, I've never heard anybody sing about, you know, trying to get his lover to meet him on the moon, but you know, it's a cool sound. That I dove back into the Riddles in the Sand album over the weekend, and there's just not a bad song on there. And I mean, you know, not to blow too much smoke, you know, at your father's, but they wrote a lot of those songs. Right, She's Going Out of My Mind. Oh my goodness, that song is just out of this world. Obviously, that Mac wrote. So yeah, there. I guess I threw three in there, but that's all of those.
I'm with you. That is an absolute fire album. My quiet favorite off that album right now, I think, is Knees of My Heart. Which is a great, great tune. But I think if I had to, since you went three, Adam, I'll go two. I have been jamming to Coast of Carolina lately, which is fun. Great tune. And our listeners have heard me tell this story. So my parents, their song's Come Monday. They dance to that. And that was their whole song because my dad was a craft worker for a long time. He'd leave and he'd go on, you know, the road all weekend. He'd do leather shows, drive back home through the night Sunday. And so Come Monday was my parents' song. Well, my wife and I, when we got married 30 years later, whatever it was, we danced to Coast of Carolina at ours, which was a lot of fun. So if you know the history of those two songs, that's pretty cool. And actually, I still love to give my wife grief over this. So Coast of Carolina, we went to see actually in Charlotte when Mac played in Charlotte one time a few years ago. He's hit the crowd a little Coast of Carolina. And I thought, hey, me and my wife can dance a little bit. That'd be cool. She was humiliated, danced with me for 5 seconds and sat back down. And she feels terrible about it. And I make sure that she keeps feeling terrible about it. But
I was going to hold things up over your spouse's head. I think
that's true. So, between that and the chores you did today, hey, you can do what you want for a few days.
That's right. So Coast of Carolina for me, License to Chill gets a little shade from some Jimmy fans, but strong album. And then I'll say my second one, since we have a great romantic theme going, Distantly in Love. And you know what? I have a thing for Jimmy Buffett albums that finish a little bit of a slower song, which is probably why I love Book on the Shelf so much. Other than the hopefulness of that song for all of his fans, I have a thing for albums that finish a little bit slow, and Distantly in Love does that on One Particular Harbor. And so I have been rocking that one hard this week. But that one's probably hangs out pretty consistently in my top 5 or 10. So not a surprise, but definitely one I'm listening a lot to right now.
Awesome.
So, all right, that was the whole thing. You guys are up.
Well, this one goes for most weeks, not just this week, but I love West Nashville Grand Ballroom. Yeah.
Good. It's that, so good.
That was the other one that I was going to mention if Adam had only had two songs.
So real quick, I have to ask, I have to interject. Have you ever heard Jimmy talk about what the inspiration was for that one?
I haven't.
I haven't either. I would love to. I was shocked it wasn't on Songs You Don't Know by Heart, because I know a lot of people wanted to hear the story behind that.
Yeah, for sure.
That is an amazing, amazing song. In fact, I'm a high school English teacher, and when we were talking about ballads a few weeks ago, I had them dissect that ballad and do an analysis on it. And of course, I blurred the F-bomb out, but but it is so good. I'm so glad you chose that.
Wait, is it ballad form? You're talking about like Beowulf ballad form? Is that what you're teaching?
Well, we started out with Beowulf, and then we got into more of the medieval ballads like Get Up and Bar the Door and stuff like that.
Okay.
So I brought it to like a more modern day type thing, you know.
Cool.
Even though that was 74, but yeah.
Yeah, right on.
It's such a great song. I went to kind of a snotty school in Nashville, so I've really connected to it. Snotty West Nashville people.
Oh yeah, were you at the show a few years ago when he played that in Nashville?
I don't know.
Probably. So he closed with that one in Nashville. It was pre-pandemic. It must have been 3 years ago. And he closed with West Nashville Grand Ballroom Gown. And when he played the first chord, my wife and I went bananas, and the people around us thought we were nuts. But I was fired up to hear it.
That's awesome. I think that's the night that we bought our house.
Congratulations. So I think we were distracted.
Also, this is a fact that no one knows. We've never seen the end of a show.
Yeah.
So we're not allowed to. We have to be in the vans. Like, they do a quick out from the back, you know, in the vans back to the hotel or whatever. And our dads would get so upset if we're not.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, so you guys missed the last couple. But you're sitting in the van.
We never see the last couple of songs.
That's funny. Fun fact. Very cool.
Yeah. Because it's usually him, right? He usually closes the shows. Yeah. And we have to, like, kind of be.
That's all right. Adam's gone.
Be backstage by then, so we never get to see that.
Yeah. Well, if you guys got an extra seat in the van next time, give me a shout. I'll jump in there for you. But West Nashville Grand Ballroom Gown, strong start. Excellent song. You guys got – remember – you got four more because you
okay.
You know.
I guess I'll go. I mean, I can be a little obvious if we're doing desert island songs.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna go Pencil Thin.
Sure.
I'm gonna do a Pencil Thin Mustache.
Yeah.
It's a Party on an Island.
The New Orleans influence makes sense there.
Absolutely. Yeah. A throwback at you, wife.
All right. Well, I'll give a shout out to my dad and say Changing Channels.
Nice.
I love that song. I love the melody of that song.
Oh yeah.
And the double entendre. I always thought it was talking about like changing channels on the TV.
Could be.
I pictured a remote control.
After all, double entendre, like you said.
Okay. Double entendre.
All right, let's discuss this. I don't know. What should we do? You want to do?
No, you have another one alone.
Okay. Well, you can also collaborate on two more. It's entirely up to you.
Collab. We could do a collab. I mean, we could do, you know, obviously Come Monday is amazing, or Pirate. Obviously,
I've been feeling He Went to Paris, though.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. I forgot.
I think we've been missing Europe.
Yeah, let's do He Went to Paris for sure. And then another one that popped up was Juicy Fruit for me.
Okay,
it's a fun kind of, you know, could be a campfire thing if you on the island, whatever.
Yeah,
we got one more though.
That's fine.
You want to do Juicy Fruit?
Sure, grapefruit.
Yeah, is that what it's called?
It's called grapefruit.
Okay, it's called grapefruit.
Agreeability. Very important on the spouse characteristics. You guys are fantastic, you know, just agreeable.
We don't fight a lot. We do.
No.
Yeah.
Have you all been to a Paris show? You mentioned He Went to Paris and Missing Europe. You know, yeah. I think, boy, we're all missing traveling quite a bit. My wife and I tend to head straight south when we travel. But have y'all been to a show in Paris? How was that?
Yeah, I've been to a few.
That was incredible.
It's wild.
Yeah.
It's wild to see people from all over Europe just going nuts.
In the U.S. for sure.
Yeah, people from the U.S. too, but it's you see like Scottish flags and German flags, and people, you know, people really like to show where they're from there, you know, to stand out, I guess, or whatever. But it's really it's fun.
It's definitely worth going if you can make it happen.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's awesome. We have listeners in Poland, fun fact, people that listen to the podcast all the way in Poland, and so at least twice a week I tell people I have
a podcast that is listened to internationally just because of our two listeners in Poland. I love it.
Man, I wish I knew how to say hi in Polish.
Very difficult language.
Yeah.
Like, difficult.
Hello in Poland, then.
Yes. Hello in Poland. Very good.
So are we just going to act like I didn't get thrown off of that meeting?
Or... Yeah.
Sorry.
So glad you're back.
I don't know what happened. Was it my poor internet from the middle of nowhere, or?
Probably so.
Okay.
I'm glad you made it back, though, just in time to close out the show with us.
So, real quick, I heard Grapefruit. I heard he went to Paris. I heard West Nashville. What else was there?
Changing channels.
You're going to have to listen, Adam. No. You're going to have to listen.
I got to listen.
To the podcast.
Changing Channels is one of my 10 favorite songs probably ever. I love that one. That's a great, great one.
Awesome.
So,
go ahead.
No, go ahead, please.
I was just going to ask you if you have a traffic light in your town.
Yeah, one. We have one. We have one traffic light in town. Yeah.
Awesome.
So,
I'm from a small town too.
Muscle Shoals, is that, you mentioned it, is that where you're from?
It is where I'm from. I'm technically from Sheffield, which is, so there's four towns in the Shoals area. It's Florence, Tuscumbia, Sheffield, and Muscle Shoals. And Sheffield is by far the smallest. We do have quite a few traffic lights, but it's really tiny.
You have quite a few, but I don't know if you have double digits.
Yeah, I don't know if there's double digits.
Well, and you also have recording studios down there that are pretty legendary.
That's true.
And I'll tell you this. Do you ever, your dad tells a funny story about learning to play Little Martha with one guitar, mostly down at those studios, which is, I've told people, one of the most incredible music feats I've ever witnessed in real life was him doing that. So that's pretty neat. If you talk to him, I'm sure he knows how much people love it. I mean, it's not going to blow the doors off when you tell him, like, oh, people think that's cool.
What are you talking about? Maybe we'll get to talk to him. Right? We're trying.
Like, yeah, people will be like, yeah, I know everyone loves that when I do that. That's why I do it, you know? So, but anyway, very cool. Very cool. Well, hey, thank you guys so much. We're coming to the end of the hour. We try to make sure we respect you all's time. And I know the doggo's hungry there, so I don't want to keep him from dinner for too much longer.
He really appreciates it. Though I have to say that hour went by very quickly. Thank you.
Oh, yeah, thanks, guys.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? You've got our email. Email us at under40pod@gmail.com. Hit up Under 40 Victims of Fate podcast on any social media you want to. And I'll tell you this, open invitation, since it was so much fun, whenever you all want to come back, give us a shout. We just love it.
Yeah, absolutely. Right, and because we were not so good at on the spot coming up with contemporary music, we'll send you a playlist.
That'd be awesome.
That'll be awesome.
If you send us a playlist, we'll link it to your episode so all of our listeners can check it out and stuff too. It'd be a great way to get some really awesome artists out there.
Sweet. Awesome.
Cool.
Very cool. Yeah, thank you guys a ton. It was a blast.
Yeah, for sure.
And thank you everybody for listening. Hank, from where I got thrown off, no music to close this one out. It's just going to be a cold close. So thank you guys a ton for listening. This has been the Under 40 Victims of Fate podcast. Fins up, everybody. Hope you have a great week.
Fins up, guys. Have a great week.